Welcome to the Helena Podcast with Huey No Sleep. This podcast rains from the studio hidden behind the Old Town Waterfalls.
Hey, this is Bo Bice, and you're listening to Helena Podcast with Huey No Sleep.
Hey, welcome to Helena Podcast. Today is January the 17th, 2012. It's been a while since I've had a podcast, and last time I had one, it was with Cam Ward. So I thought it would be appropriate, since Cam Ward was in town, is to sit down at La Reunion, have a cup of coffee and a croissant, and talk to him. So we'll jump right into the middle of it. If you hear some pauses, it's because we were drinking coffee and eating. Sorry. Here we go.
You know, I think looking at the upcoming session, which is what I was doing at the Kiwanis Club today, talk a little bit about the budget issues that face all of us. And while that seems like a state problem, really and truly, it trickles all the way down here to Helena. I mean, it affects your schools, it affects your law enforcement, it affects roads. So it's a big issue, our budget crisis that we face.
We're drinking coffee.
Yes, we're sipping our coffee on the way through, having a conversation. But, you know, the budget crisis we face, everyone kind of thinks it's a faraway place, but it's Washington, D.C., the debt crisis they're doing, or here in Alabama, where you have obviously an underfunded Medicaid and correctional system. That eventually is going to trickle back over and hurt your schools, and you don't want to see that. So we kind of have to make some tough decisions coming up in Montgomery this time.
At the Kiwanis meeting, you were talking about
prisons and Medicaid chew up 50% of the general fund budget of the state of Alabama today. We're a poor state, so you're going to have more people on Medicaid. Prisons, that number's been climbing for years. We actually spend less per prisoner than anyone else in the United States, yet it's still one of the largest expenditures of our government. So that tells you the kind of problem you have. There's no way you can cut spending in prisons. I mean, we're cheaper now than everybody. You look at the famous Sheriff Joe, who everyone loves to look to in Arizona, because he does such a good job with his tent cities. But you know what's amazing there is in Arizona, they actually spend close to $60 per inmate a day. We spend $42, $44 a day per inmate. So that tells you, despite all the fame and tough on crime they are, they're spending maybe 15, 20% more in their prison system than we are. So it's a problem. We have a real issue.
And you were saying you couldn't privatize prisons because...
We've looked at the issue of privatizing prisons before, and what we discovered was that most companies are actually, the lowest bid was $52 an inmate. It would cost us $10 a day more per inmate to privatize our system. It's money we don't have. And to think that we're getting to the point where in California, federal courts came in and said, you know what, California correction system was at 180% capacity. They basically taken over their system. They've thrown around 30,000 inmates to be released. It's cost a huge financial burden to the state of California. And they're at 180% capacity. We're at 193% capacity. Imagine what something like that would do to Alabama if courts came in and allowed all these criminals to go free and made us pay hundreds of millions of dollars more to upgrade a correctional system. Money that could be used for schools, money that could be used to shore up other programs, roads, law enforcement. That's the danger we face.
And the currently, if the prisons get too packed, they start letting people go on parole early.
You know, what you do is you start releasing people early. Well, that's a danger, because what you want to do, our goal should be, your violent offenders really need to be in prison longer, whether it's your sex offenders, rapists, murderers, those who commit heinous crimes against other people. We should keep them in prison longer. But under the current system, they're all taking up the same bed space. So your nonviolent drug possession offender is taking up a bed that really needs to be reserved for someone to stay in there longer who's a violent offender. So that's what we have to get at. And that's not soft on crime. That's common sense on crime.
Yeah, it costs the same to take a kid who got caught smoking a joint as a serial killer.
You're spending the exact same amount for the kid who got caught with a joint as you are spending on the guy who committed mass murder. And that's ridiculous. We need to make sure the violent people are staying there longer, and we don't have a mass release or early release for those kind of criminals.
Everybody calls La Reunion.
This is one of my favorite places, by the way. I love coming here. I do. They have great coffee. They just have the best coffee here. I love coming here. So I talk about that in the sense that prisons are a big issue for our budget. They're a big issue now, and they have the potential to be a bigger issue down the road. And everyone should be concerned about that, because a mass release of prisoners, what does that do to your small communities like this that pride themselves on being safe, pride themselves on having a good quality of life? You don't want to see that kind of mass release around our state. I certainly don't.
Right.
If the courts ever got hold of our system, that's what would happen.
And it's going to get worse because you're saying half of it was Medicaid and prisons, and Medicaid's going to get worse.
Medicaid, by the year 2015, it's estimated that the state of Alabama will have to add 300,000 new Medicaid enrollees to our system. That's the Obamacare.
Right.
That's one of the things that came out of Obamacare, is they said you're going to add roughly about 300,000 new recipients. The amount of financial burden that's going to put on our state general fund is unbelievable. We're already $400 million less this year coming in on our general fund than we were last year. $400 million is roughly 20% less for a general fund. Imagine if you have 20% less money, but we're creeping up on the day when they say you're going to add 20 to 30% more to your Medicaid enrollment. It's crushing. It's going to crush us to death. So we have to start being smart about how we cut back on costs.
Can states go bankrupt?
States have gone bankrupt.
Really? The entire state?
Yes, that has happened. There is a history of that, and that is a very, very dangerous situation. That would be an economic disaster for us. And we don't have to do that. There are ways we can get around it. Right now, we have things we can do, whether it's changing some of your, shifting your money around in your prison system so that it's being used better to keep overcrowding down, whether it's reforming parts of Medicaid. One, you can trim a little bit of the fraud out. There is some fraud there. It's not enough to make a big financial difference, but you can still cut it out. There's ways we could do it, but we're going to have to make some tough decisions this session. And it's not going to be politics as usual. Things that sound good on the campaign trail or are a fiery speech to a crowd may not necessarily be what's going to solve this problem when you get in Montgomery. It's going to require some tough choices.
I was telling you earlier, if someone said, oh yeah, we're going to have let prisoners go and stuff like that, if it's presented that way, then it's, well, that's a bad idea. But
yeah.
If you actually hear what the problem is and how much it's costing and the type of people who are being put away for life for doing minor crimes, the three strikes and out.
Mm-hmm. Texas is a great example. Texas had a Republican legislature, Rick Perry is the governor. They came in and they actually took it further than I'm proposing. They really went after and did a huge, huge new, really revolutionary in how they sentenced criminals. They did away with the Habitual Offender Act. They did things that many people argue soften crime. They did all these things that created alternative sentencing, did community corrections. This is law and order Texas now. They did this. Not only did it relieve their overcrowding, but their crime rate actually dropped. So it shows there's not going to be some uptick in huge criminal activity. It worked. It really worked. And we can, if law and order Texas can do it, if Virginia can do it, South Carolina can do it, Alabama can do it. What you can't do, and what people have repeatedly told me, is they said, well, we just build more prisons. There's not enough money in the world to build the amount of prison space we have to have. One brand new prison, which is the cheapest of the cheap, before you turn on the lights, before you staff it, would cost about $100 million. You only have $1.5 billion in your general fund.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did $100 million, you're talking about 5 or 6% of your whole budget would build one prison that would house 1,500 inmates. That would be maximum capacity on day one. 1,500 inmates. We have a total of 28,000 inmates. So a new prison wouldn't even put a cut into it.
And no one wants to have tax to pay for prison.
Yeah, who wants to pay for that? No one. If you want your revenue, what do you want it for? You want it for your schools or your roads or something that's tangible that you can see and benefits all the citizens. No one wants to pay more money to house prisoners because it looks at it like, well, I'm law-abiding. They had their chance. They broke the law. They should be punished. Why am I paying more for them on their incarceration? So there's got to be other ways to do it, and alternative sentencing is a way to do it. Drug courts, community corrections. There are ways to do this where they get punished, but also allows them to help pay for part of their punishment.
You had a story where you were talking about you had visited, was it in St. Clair County?
St. Clair County, about the inmate. It's just a devastating story. You look at St. Clair, and they're actually at 200% capacity. They're one of the most overcrowded in the state. And what scares me about that situation is I was in a yard walking with the warden and some of the guards just discussing the situation. And you looked around, you saw 150 to 200 inmates. And they're all wearing the white outfits. Then you see three blue uniformed officers, three correctional officers, boys, 22 years old, three unarmed. Those three were guarding the 150 to 200 inmates in there. There is no way in the world they have any control of this situation. And by not fixing overcrowding problems like that, we're putting those guys' lives in danger. Because all it's going to take is 1 year where the air conditioner breaks, and most of them are air conditioned down anyway, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But 1 year when that happens, they have hot summer, or they have a situation where a riot breaks out, those young men, their lives would be on the line because we didn't address the prisoner of a crime. And it's a problem. Those guards will tell you it's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Newsom, who's a prison guard, who said basically they just tried not to get themselves killed.
Yeah.
Just went along with everything.
I talked to a prison guard who told me, he says, we really don't have control here. He goes, the way we keep control is whatever kind of food we serve. Because that food kind of keeps them happy or not. And they can't be armed because they're not allowed to carry sidearms in there because it's so dangerous to have them on there because an inmate could take their weapon from them.
It's a scary job.
They're the most underpaid, they're the lowest average pay in the country for how a prison guard in California makes a little over $100,000 on average. In Alabama, that prison guard is making around $30,000 a year. They're not being paid much. They would make much more money to go work for a city police department. State police go work anywhere in law enforcement besides doing that. I mean, it's a low-paying job. But you're talking about putting your life on the line. We talk about police officers who have to deal with criminals. These guys live with these criminals every day. So you can imagine how scary that is for them. And that's why it's an urgency, too, to deal with the problem.
So someone sued the prison system in California?
They
sued. The federal courts came in and then said...
They said it was unconstitutional. They said it was a cruel and unusual punishment, is what the courts were. And when they did, they said, here's our solution for you. And they basically took it over and dictated what the fixes would be. And the fixes could be anything. They could say, Art, you're going to do a mass release of prisoners, which nobody wants. And in addition to that, you're going to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to upgrade and fix your facilities. We couldn't possibly afford it.
And they can make us do it.
They can make you do it.
And pay whatever amount.
Absolutely. They've done that with other agencies. When Alabama fell short in DHR, they had what was called the RC consent decree, where DHR had really fallen down on certain things with regard to the services they provided. And the court said, hey, by the way, you're not providing adequate services here. You're going to fix this. And yeah, they can do that. They can do that. And as much as we like to argue that we don't think they should, they still can. That's the way it is. And we've got to address that.
You're going to write a bill and try to convince...
Here's what I want to do. And I've talked to a lot of legislators, and I think there's a way to do this. First of all, we need to look at our long-term goals. Protect citizens, law-abiding citizens. That's the point of all correctional systems. Protect your citizens who are law-abiding. The way you do that is this. Write a bill that says, in the long term, we want to keep violent offenders locked away longer for a truth in sentencing for your violent people. Second, change some of the sentencing guidelines. Allow the sentencing commission, which has already been established, to come up with new sentencing guidelines for your first-time nonviolent offenders, your drug possession, alcohol problem, and say, we're going to start using more programs like community corrections, where you actually have to work and pay for your restitution and pay for your drug rehabilitation. And you get randomly drug tested and you stay at some minimum security facility while you do that. Creating those kind of programs will free up the prison space for the more hardened criminals to stay in there longer while at the same time reducing some of our overcrowding. So that's the way out of this. The way you do it, though, is you have legislation that says the Sentencing Commission will come up with guidelines only for your nonviolent offenders. And then we in the legislature can override that recommendation if we want to. That bill was passed in Virginia by a Republican legislature led by a Republican attorney general, Republican governor, and it worked out very well, actually.
What's my other stuff going on? The senators get around and talk and they know what the big hot issues are going to be when they go back to session.
I think everybody handles it differently. My big issues are the areas that I have say, you know, committees kind of dictate where your major influence is in the legislature, because the committees are where the bulk of the work is done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm chairman of Judiciary and chairman of the Energy Committee, so I deal with those two issues more than anything else. I'm looking at some proposals where we reward local companies on biomass production, alternative energy for the state of Alabama. Those are a small issue. I'm looking at that. I'm also working on legislation dealing with cybercrime. Right now, federal government probably leads the way with regard to how they are able to prosecute cybercrimes, theft, ID theft,
mm-hmm.
Some of the phishing programs that are out there with regard to even online child pornography. The problem states have had is it's very hard to prosecute these cases. Most of the tools we have in our laws are outdated and they're pre-internet age laws. I'm looking at overhauling ours, where Alabama and California would actually have the two most comprehensive cyber crime laws in the country, working with the District Attorney's Association, the Attorney General, and other prosecutors on how we can make it so that it's easier to go after someone and prosecute them under Alabama law for engaging in cyber theft. They go in and take your credit card numbers and take your information off your computer. That's another big issue I'm working on this time, too. So that'll be a big law for me.
Yeah, well, I watched the Helena crime reports, and there's always identity thefts. I guess they call the police when it happens.
The problem is this, is how do you prosecute that person who committed the crime? Are they prosecuted in the area in which they were typing on the computer? Are they prosecuted in the area where the crime occurred?
What is jurisdiction, yeah.
It's a huge jurisdictional issue. So what my law, what my bill does is it expands our jurisdiction over certain criminals. And I think it'll probably be one of the toughest in the country with regard to how we go after these people. But it's smart. It's going forward and looking at, this is the technology we deal with now with regard to computers. Let's try to make sure our laws cater to this new technology. But that's another big issue for me this session. It'll be a big priority bill for me. I know. It's the funny thing. This is the time, January is always the time of year we spend going around the district talking about issues. And everyone has 100 issues they want to address each session. And of course, I'll get a vote on those. But I have to focus also, too, on what my agenda is and the committees I'm on. So I'm making sure I'm pushing issues that I have a lot of influence over. And it just happens to be I deal with the civil justice system and criminal justice system a lot. So I try to make sure I target and do things that are going to be productive this session dealing with those issues.
You think you're getting opposition?
Oh, sure. You always do. You always do. But at the same time, I think I can make some pretty good arguments. Anytime you go somewhere like we did with the Helena Kiwanis Club, you go in there and talk to them and you lay out the arguments for the bills, you see how receptive they were, because average everyday citizens talk about these issues and go, wow, yeah, we've got some problems we need to fix. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to do. I mean, sometimes they're not politically easy, but, you know, you didn't elect me to take the easy way out anyway, so.
Yeah, you were in the House earlier, and now you're in the Senate.
I was two terms in the House, now I'm in the Senate, yeah.
So you have, like, a larger scope of issues you really got to address.
You do. I have a larger scope of issues. I serve on more committees now. I serve on a lot of committees, which is great. I enjoy that because I enjoy the work, but also I represent a bigger area. I represented roughly 44,000 people when I was in the House. Today I represent 169,000 people. Chilton County, Shelby, Bibb, parts of Jefferson. It's a lot of area I represent, so it also takes a lot of geographic getting around a lot. It takes a lot of time to get around and see all those communities. But it's great. I enjoy it. I'm having a great time. I'm enjoying representing Helena. This is my 9th year I've represented the city of Helena, and I enjoy it. They've always been great to me, and I like to spend a lot of time over here, too, because of that, because they're just wonderful people to represent.
Job plans?
Yes, there is there is jobs legislation coming. Right now, and while I focused a lot on the budget and prisons and Medicaid and education, at the end of the day, the number one issue on everyone's mind, the top priority issue, I should say, hands down, is the economy. Alabama's economy started to get a little bit better. One time we peaked at 10% unemployment. We're back down to 8.3, which is good. Shelby County is getting closer to that magical 5% unemployment, which is really good for us again. But it's still the biggest issue in this state, the economy. And how do you do that? Well, first of all, my personal opinion, anyone who comes out and says, legislature is going to go out and create more jobs. Well, government does not create jobs. They never have and never will. Not the kind of jobs that are meaningful for the economy. They may create a bigger bureaucracy, but that doesn't help the economy. But what we can do is we can reward existing businesses by saying, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a tax break if you're going to expand and hire X number of new employees. If you're going to spend $2 million expanding your factory and you're going to hire 30 employees, we're going to help you out and give you a break so you don't have to pay taxes on certain parts of that expansion. That will encourage them to expand their businesses even more, which reduces unemployment. And at the end of the day, he actually increases revenue to our budgets because you have more people working, more people paying income taxes. So I think you'll see a legislative package come together from the leadership of both the House and the Senate that really goes after the jobs plan. What we're going to see is go after existing business and help them expand what they're doing now in Alabama.
When does the session start?
February 7th.
How long does it last? Until
mid to late May. And that's under statute. We can't go any longer than that. It'll be a very interesting session. We'll also have redistricting come up. I serve on the redistricting committee, and that will have a big impact on our area. I think looking at some of the drafts I've seen, my lines will not change any at all when it comes to Helena. I think I'll still represent all of Helena.
All right, I think I heard that. Helena wouldn't change. I think a couple of places that were really large were going to be in different places, but
sure,
they were
Most of my district for Shelby County will stay the same, though. And I want it that way because I represent this area in the House, and I've come to be very comfortable with the people I represent. So I would like my part of Shelby County to stay the same. Now, I'll have to lose a lot of people. Under the average population breakdown, my district is about 38,000 over what it should be. I'll have to lose a lot. I would imagine a large portion of that will come out of parts of Chilton County and Jefferson County. But I want to keep this part of Shelby County intact. And I think you should, if possible, and it's not always possible, but if possible, I think communities should have one senator and one representative.
Right.
Helena, right now, when I was in the House, we split Helena in half. Representative Mary Sue McClurk and I split the tape in half, and now Representative Weaver and McClurk and split it in half. But I think it would be best if we could figure out a way to make sure one representative represents Helena and one senator represents.
Yeah, Mary's way up north, isn't she? She is. It kind of wiggles around.
Yeah, it wiggles around the northern part of the county, but it's hard that way because what happens is they say, well, I'm in Cahaba Falls, so-and-so represents me, but oh, by the way, right up here in Deering Downs, that's somebody else. Mm-hmm. And a community like Helena, which is very cohesive, and they work together, and they do good things together in the community, it's bad public policy to have two different legislators splitting neighborhoods down the middle. And literally, part of my House district split neighborhoods in half. And that's, I hope we can get away from that. I don't know that we can, but I hope we can.
That'd be nice.
How was that for a freewheeling interview?
That was pretty. You know, I actually have. I'm going to put it at the beginning. Okay, that's it. Thanks again to Cam Ward for coming on the podcast. Next time, we're going to have Jerry Pate, who's the senior member on the Helena City Council, who's doing some exciting things with a community lodge in Joe Tucker Park. I'm supposed to meet with them Monday, so I'll try to get that up as soon as possible. Everybody have a great week, and I'll see you around town.